Let's bring in Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith, National Police Association. You know Betsy. And good morning.
Hey, good morning, Dawn. I was feeling pretty sad here in Southern Arizona because it's only going to be 65 until I heard your report. So I know.
See, rub it in.
Sorry.
Go ahead. And you're a Chicago native, so you've been on the other side of this,
I got out.
My friend. Yes. I envy Arizona. Nice. But when you look from, and you've served, obviously, as somebody, you've served in law enforcement, now you're biggity big with the National Police Association, but you've worn many different hats in your law enforcement career. When you look at somebody like a Mayor Sherelle Parker, who is, I see her delegating this. And so mm-hmm. now she has a new czar, if you will. She has new deputies, and she created a new deputy position for somebody to say, hey, you're in charge now. And this is what she's doing. She's saying, okay, my new police commish, you've got 100 days. Let's see how you're going to problem solve Kensington. We've got an open drug market, not acceptable. But she's delegating this so that ultimately she can fire these people. that's how I see it.
And that is the thing. Instead of making a political appointment, you know, for commissioner, you know, somebody that helped her get elected, whatever it is, she's going out there, and she really has been since she won the primary, and saying, here's some of the things I'm going to do. Here's some of the things that are problems. Her energy is extraordinary. I have to say that. And her choice of Kevin Bethel as the Philadelphia Police Commissioner, I think, was a very, very wise choice. You know, the police department's at least 1,000 cops short, and Bethel knows the PD, but he also knows what it's like to work outside of that structure. And I think that's something that is really going to be important. He was mentored by Charles Ramsey. You know, I think a lot of people in Philadelphia remember him. We remember him in Illinois. And the commissioner talks about that a lot, about how his admiration for what Charles Ramsey did. He says he's a data-driven guy. And this is the one thing that I think we're going to need to watch in these first 100 days. Excuse me. Is he going to use data to put people in jail, or is he going to go back to kind of what he talked about in the schools? He talked a lot about restorative justice, mm-hmm. and he used a lot of statistics there. The street is not the schools.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're hopeful that what he is going to do is kind of what the mayor has been talking about. Constitutional stop and frisk, identifying who the bad guys are, and getting them off the streets. He needs to focus on bad guys, not just guns.
Yeah, and just to review on restorative justice, I've done a lot on it and done a lot of interviews on it, Betsy. But I would say, you know, restorative justice is great when you have kids who, you know, egg the home of somebody who maybe is a senior citizen, and then they have the chance to face that person as long as both, you know, as long as the senior, the victim, wants to face them. They say, I'm sorry for doing this, helping clean it up, and getting to know them and having the opportunity to apologize, having the opportunity for that individual to forgive them. And so that works in those nonviolent, you know, settings. I think it has a place, and I think it's fantastic when they use it in the right way. But to your point, this is when we think about the violence here, stabbing. They continue to say the gun violence, but this morning is an example of the stabbings, the Macy's situation, stabbing. So it's a culture of violence, in my humble opinion. And yes, media, social media, then the pandemic that shut kids out of school, you know, all of this kind of supersized it. But take me through, you know, just if you would, why you think Bethel, Commissioner Bethel, and as well then the naming, and he was part of the naming of the first Latino deputy police commissioner in Philadelphia history, and that's Deputy Commissioner Pedro Rosario, who's also a 29-year veteran of the police department. Why do you think some of these appointments, why this may be very, very effective and well taken in Philadelphia?
Well, the Danielle outlawed did damage your prior police commissioner. There's no doubt about that. You know, now I know her defenders say, you know, she had all these black swan events, you know, the George Floyd riots and the pandemic and all that. But she did some damage, and part of that damage was people leaving. Now, the other part of the damage that's going to have to be undone is, of course, your prosecutor. And so I have hope that Kevin Bethel is going to come in, and I think that he is going to demand that the cases brought to the prosecutor's office need to be prosecuted. You know, and that's when I talk about restorative justice, and you're absolutely right. But really, when you talk about restorative justice, what we need is diversion. Young people, nonviolent criminals need good diversion programs. That's how you save young people. But, you know, if you got a 14-year-old that's doing carjackings, they need to go to prison. You can't divert them. You can't pat them on the head and say, sorry, you weren't breastfed long enough. They've got to go to prison. I also think that there is a lot of hope in Kevin Bethel's desire to work with the FOP president, the union president, Roosevelt Popular. He, you know, although he says, hey, yeah, this could be contentious. Mm-hmm. But they both have already pledged to work together to A, bring in more cops, and B, take, you know, handle violent crime. And I love that he's talking about Kensington, you know, that. You know, when I looked at so many videos of the Kensington neighborhood, and it looks very similar to parts of Tucson, Arizona here, where just the slumped over, tranked up people. And now, you know, you've got this horrible weather. You know, that's so dangerous on many levels. At least it's warm here for our drug addicts. But, you know, these open air drug markets lead to so many other crimes. So I think that Commissioner Bethel is already kind of starting a couple steps up just because it's been so bad. But, you know, he's got gun crime. He's got homicides. It continues to be an issue. But just violent crime in general, just like this situation at Temple University this morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, you'd think you'd be able to just walk to work.
Yeah. Amen.
And not have to worry about being stabbed by some emotionally disturbed person or whoever it is that, you know, we, of course, we'll find out. So, yeah, but I think Mayor Parker, when I look at her leadership style so far, she's not going to get in his way. And that's a big advantage. She's going to see what he does. That's something a leader does. A leader has enough confidence to say, hey, you know, like you said, you got 100 days. See what you can fix in those 100 days, and I'll stay out of your way.
And you alluded to Philadelphia DA Larry Krasner, not the most popular guy in the city, even though he won re-election again. I mean, twice elected. But I wonder what would happen if that election were held today, quite frankly. I know that he has now brought forward litigation last week to block implementation of this Act 40, which was a law signed by Democrat Governor Josh Shapiro that would see Krasner's authority to prosecute cases throughout much of the city stripped and replaced by a special SEPTA prosecutor. What do you make of that?
Well, that's a trend that we're seeing around the country. There's, you know, and that's what, you know, people, they say, why doesn't the governor step in? Why doesn't it varies state to state? You know, in Florida, Governor DeSantis, you know, he has the power to just fire, literally walk out a county prosecutor who is not doing their job. It's statutory. It's not that case in everywhere. So what is being done in Pennsylvania is this Act 40 that says if you are not doing the job you were elected to do, and that's Larry Krasner as prosecutor, then we have the power to bring in somebody who will. They can't push Krasner out, but they can bring in a prosecutor who will properly prosecute cases. And what that does is that takes power away from Larry Krasner. And that is the problem with these Soros-installed prosecutors in many areas. They have this absolute power to decide how the law is enforced. That's not constitutional. It's not the American justice system. They are not supposed to have that much leeway. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, you know, as they battle this out. But you're right. Larry Krasner was reelected. I wonder if he would be, if the election was in 2024. But that Soros money buys an awful lot of goodwill on television and in newspapers and on buses and things like that. And what that says, everyone who can vote or not vote for Larry Krasner, who's listening to this, pay attention to the election and the people, not the commercials that you see on TV.
Yeah, I wanted to ask your take on something, and that is I'm watching with my teenage sons are guilty watching is Narcos, because we never saw any of the series. And they go through, but it's fascinating. And this brings me to recently, we have a movement for the federal government to change the classification of marijuana is where I'm leading with this. But there's this one scene in Narcos where they're talking about marijuana versus, for example, cocaine. And at one point they say, you know, hey, Americans, they fear the cocaine, but marijuana someday it will be legalized. And so they literally, these narcos are debating it's almost like people on Wall Street debating which stock is going to be bigger. You know, they're looking at marijuana versus the others, but they were right, essentially. What's your take on all of this with the marijuana movement as far as now changing, whether it's, what is it, a class 3, and so, you know, changing the classification of a drug like marijuana?
Well, I was fighting the war on drugs in the 80s. I was undercover in the Chicago metro area. You know, so if you would have told me back then, that kid in her 20s, that we're going to legalize marijuana someday, I would have been horrified. You know, fast forward to 2024 when we have, 27 states where marijuana is legal. I do believe that the federal government needs to catch up on this, if only for the banking portion of it, for you know, if everybody doesn't understand that when you go to buy your legal THC, your legal marijuana, you've got to pay cash because the federal government regulates banking, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not a huge fan of recreational marijuana, but I do think that the federal government needs to step into this situation, if for nothing more than to make the banking and the regulation of marijuana easier. In other words, the payment. But I gotta tell you, as we travel, you know, training cops, you look at Colorado compared to a place like, for example, here in Arizona. Our law enforcement does such a good job here in Arizona of regulating where you can use marijuana. In other words, you can't just light up a blunt and walk down the street here in Arizona and smoke weed. You can in Colorado, because they've just kind of given up. That's the difference in how you deal with legalized marijuana. You can't walk around drinking a bottle of vodka, theoretically, in somebody's neighborhood. You can't walk around smoking a joint. It's where it's used is what needs to be regulated, I believe.
Yeah, and I know that there are all these different studies where they're saying marijuana has the lower potential for abuse than other drugs. All these studies have come out. I know that FDA, I don't know, I haven't seen within the past few days if the DEA actually, you know, has officially come out on this, although there are a lot of reports swirling. But ultimately, right now, it's a Schedule 1 drug. They want to make it a Schedule 3. And what does that mean for law? Because, you know, what does that mean for law enforcement from a law enforcement perspective?
What that means is it's just further decriminalization. We've been decriminalizing marijuana, you know, since the late 80s. I mean, it went from a custodial arrest in the 80s to a ticket. And so that further decriminalization just means that you know, you're going to get a citation or maybe even a written warning for having a joint on you, a personal use amount, if you're in an area where it's still illegal. And the same thing with again, and this is the confusion with legalized marijuana, you know, in certain states, and then but still illegal when it comes to the federal government. You know, if the so that's why if the DEA, you know, if the federal government is allowed to further decriminalize marijuana, then you're not going to see the DEA get involved in cases except for, you know, high amounts of marijuana. And understand this, just because marijuana is legal doesn't mean you can now just deal it. You know, it's still a very regulated, you know, just like you can't make your own you can't make your own beer and sell it out your backyard. You can't, you know, go and import a big trunk full of marijuana from Mexico and then sell it out of your trunk. It's still regulated. And of course, part of that is the government wants their portion, you know, their taxes. And but, you know, a big part of that is if you're going to have something people are going to consume, then it needs to be regulated for, you know, for you know, the fact that it's clean and it doesn't have other things mixed in with it and things like that. So I think if the, again, I'm not a big fan of the federal government, but I do think in this case, if the federal government got more on board, this would certainly help the illegal, the enforcement of stopping people bringing illegal drugs into this country, because it would allow federal authorities to focus more on that and also be able to regulate better things like marijuana coming from untoward sources like the southern border.
And why? So from a law, and I'll make this quick because I want to get into the swatting issue real quick here. But from a law enforcement aspect, if somebody's growing a little plant in their, I don't know, in their front window or whatever, then that technically is illegal. But does this kind of move, if they make it a, you know, a three instead of a one, does that make it so that nobody prosecutes it? Because now it becomes a tax, because the government, the only reason the government wants this, to your point, is to get the taxes out of it, because it's so heavily taxed, right?
Right.
That's always, I don't know, that's always my question. Well, because they're also processing it. I don't know. Let me get on to swatting, if you don't want to. I know you're just laughing at me.
Well, no, it's just, are we arresting people for having a marijuana plant on their porch? Generally speaking, we're not. And, you know, that the marijuana industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. So it's probably time the federal government got on board with that. Instead of having this ridiculous division of it's sort of legal, but it's not legal in whatever state you're in.
I just wanted to end on something that, you know, with SWAT, so much we're hearing in the news about these different swatting incidents and from different individuals, whether they're it's becoming political, where they're using that as a weapon against different judges in high profile cases. Or different individuals who are, you know, famous individuals who are maybe campaigning for something. But ultimately, from the law enforcement perspective, can you talk about swatting and why it's so important to deal with this issue?
Well, absolutely. So there's recent cases. I mean, the White House just got swatted the other day. And we've had, you know, recently Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia, she got swatted. Jack Smith, the special counsel who's prosecuting Trump, you know, got swatted. On and on and on. This has been going on since, you know, the Kardashians got swatted in 2014. But, you know, basically what this is somebody is able to access the 911 center of any given police department, and they say, oh, there's a murder in progress at Betsy Brand or Smith's house. You better send the police. And they make it seem very realistic, very violent, things like that. So the police come. That's why it's called swatting, because they come thinking they're coming to an armed, violent situation. And so, of course, this is, first of all, it's initially very dangerous for the poor people who are not committing a crime in their own home. And the police come. It's dangerous for the police. And it's very, very difficult to find out who made the phone call, because now, thanks to technology, you know, you can route and reroute and reroute and reroute. I don't want to say how to do it, but phone calls into 911 centers and not know where the phone call came from. So it's a dangerous situation for everybody involved, including law enforcement. And it's a very frustrating situation to be able to find out who did it. And it's a very odd prosecution, because very often you're crossing state lines. There's use of technology. It's difficult to prosecute even when you identify somebody.
Betsy Brantner Smith, Sergeant Betsy, thank you so much. National Police Association, which I always close by saying is a nonprofit, could always use your support. Thanks, Betsy.